From NPR, it's the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, our lineup of outstanding young musicians includes an 11-year-old crackerjack violinist performing one of Sarasate's showpieces. And the playful teenagers in today's string quartet tell us that dancing salsa is an effective way to prepare for a classical music concert. Here's our host, renowned concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, everybody. It's great to be back in our hometown of Boston. Boston is the only city in the world proven susceptible to terrorist attack by cartoon characters. Good going there. We've brought our hometown crowd, our usual diverse selection of kids. We've got a young flutist who has cooked his way through his lessons. You'll see what I mean in a while. And our 15-year-old pianist started college, if you can believe it, at the age of 11. And speaking of 11, our first musician has arrived on stage. Please welcome from Bayside, New York, one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award winners, 11-year-old violinist Anna Lee. Anna, welcome to the program. You've brought us one of Sarasate's exciting Spanish dances. Tell everybody what it's called in Spanish, and you probably know what it means in English too, don't you?
The piece I'm going to play is called Zapateado, and in English that means the cobbler.
Cobbler. You like this piece because you said it's just like you. Are you a shoemaker?
No, I don't make shoes, but I think that this piece is just like me because it's running around, and it's very curious, and it actually wants to have fun and not be locked up in a cage, and it always wants to, like, it wants to know everything. It wants an answer to every question, and I'm really curious, too, and I like to know a lot of things.
Curious and ambitious and happy in your work. So when you're ready, we will take it from the top. Thank you. Pablo Sarasate's Zapateado, played for us by 11-year-old violinist Anna Lee from Bayside, New York. What a performance. This is fantastic.
Thank you.
Did I do okay? Was the tempo okay?
Yeah.
Felt good? You just sound so solid. Just like you could probably play it twice that fast and not break a sweat. Anyway, but just so playful, so nice the way you do it. Anna, it's been a while since we've had a real 11-year-old on the show, and so I was hoping you could remind us. Somewhere in our dim memory, we know what it's like to be your age. First of all, at 11, size matters, right?
A lot.
Yeah? Do you have size issues?
Well, I'm pretty short for my age, I think.
No! Don't say that. No, and really, do people call you names and stuff? Or?
Well, when I was younger, I was really, really short. And my Korean name, it's really hard to pronounce, and it's Ji-eun. And everyone, because they couldn't pronounce it, they used to call me Shorty because I was practically the smallest kid in the whole class.
Aww.
So I pretty much stand up for myself, and I don't really like being called names. So I asked my parents for English name, and my dad came up with a list of names he thought I might like. Mm-hmm. And actually, for a while when I was a kid, I was obsessed with bananas. Like, I would eat it night and day. And on the list of names was Anna. And it's also a palindrome, so it's really cool if you can, like write your name backwards. And Anna is also a prophetess from the Bible, and I'm Christian. So I really like that name, and from that day on, I guess I use the name Anna.
This is all information that 11-year-olds hold dear. They know what palindromes are. The trivia of prophetesses from the Bible, all 11-year-olds know this stuff, just so you know. And Anna Banana, Bobana, all that. Yeah, it really works. It's a wonderful name. It's a cute name. You're small. We're not going to call you Shorty, but you have a big 11-year-old attitude. Do you get into arguments? You don't get into fights, do you?
Well, I guess I'm pretty bossy when it comes to schoolwork. Mm-hmm. And I really like to concentrate on what I'm doing, especially if it's like a project or something really serious, or if I'm practicing. So I'm pretty strict, and one time at school, we were having a debate in fourth grade, and there was this kid, he really didn't like me because I used to boss over him, telling him to get working. And we were on the opposite side, so he was really, really glad. And then the day of the debate, my team won by like a million points practically, and he was so mad, like he was fuming, and like from that day on, he called me little girl, big attitude.
Oh. That's sort of double-edged. I mean, it's not exactly an insult.
Yeah.
What was the question under debate? Do you remember?
I think the question was, does penmanship really matter? Like, cursive writing and computer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you come down on that question?
I was on the penmanship side. And that. Like,
so it matters? It really matters?
Yeah.
Boy, am I in big trouble.
Yeah.
Man. I'm not going to cross you. Now, you are tough and confrontational and a little girl with a big attitude, but you're not that tough when it comes to nasty, creepy, crawly insects. Just
ew.
Like insects in general. You just never like... What about... I mean, do you have to dissect them in school or anything like that? Or?
Oh, no, not yet.
But they show up in school anyway.
Fortunately.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one time I was at school and I had to go to the bathroom and we were in the auditorium. And after I came back, there was a big roach on the seat. I was freaked out. It was right there, and it was like just lying there dead. Actually, it was a rubber one, but I couldn't tell the difference between rubber and real. So I screamed my head off and just ran away.
That was that kid from the debate, I bet.
Maybe.
Instead of the horse's head, you know. You got the rubber roach on the seat. So what do you think the best thing about being 11 is?
I think that the best thing about being 11 is that you're finally growing up and that you're going to feel more responsible. So you don't rely on your parents that much. So you're in the middle of growing up and still being a child under your parents' care. And like, I still rely on my mom for clothes and shopping, and I rely on my dad to, you know, help me practice sometimes and to help me point out a few things. Mm-hmm. But then I also have to, like, teach myself to do my own things and to do my own homework and to, like, whether I sleep a lot or not.
That's right. Good. You have that motivation and that responsibility. That's wonderful. I'll tell you what the best thing about being 11 is. So on a scale from 1 to 10, you, Anna, are definitely an 11. Definitely.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Anna. Beautiful. Anna Lee, 11-year-old violinist from Bayside, New York.
To hear Anna Lee play music is delightful. To see her is divine. Go to our website, fromthetop.org, to find out how you can be part of our live audience. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise but with financial need. On the web at jackkentcookfoundation.org, and that's Cook with an E. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Tarantella Quartet. They all study at the Walnut Hill School in nearby Natick, Massachusetts. The quartet's members are Julia Glenn from Wellesley, Massachusetts, and Robert Anemone from Williamsburg, Virginia, both 17 and both play violin. Celia Hatton, 17-year-old violist from Springfield, Virginia, and Thomas Mesa, 16-year-old cellist from Miami, Florida. We have Julia at the mic. Julia, why don't you introduce this piece you're going to play?
Sure. We're going to be playing Schulhoff's 5 pieces for a string quartet, movement 3 a la Cecca and 5 a la Tarantella. Thank you.
The Tarantella Quartet, 16 and 17 years old. Julia Glenn and Robert Anemone, violinists. Celia Hatton, violist, and Thomas Mesa, cellist. Really some great frenetic energy and really exciting playing in that performance. These pieces of Schulhoff are really got something. I'm glad we got to hear them. We don't often get to hear them on radio. You've named your quartet in honor of the fantastic Tarantella movement you just played, but also for another reason, Celia.
Right, well, all of us really, really enjoy dancing, actually. We just got out of a dance party before we came on stage, but Julia and I went to the same summer music festival, and, you know, after 4 to 5 hours of being stuck in a practice room, we had to get a little energy out. So there's this one guy, Raul, from Puerto Rico. He taught about 15 girls how to merengue and how to salsa, and
wow.
So we had about 5 or 6 dance parties.
So hooked and
hooked, yeah.
Totally into it. Tommy, how about you? Party animal, dancer.
Pretty much. Well, when you're from in Miami, you're pretty much required to know how to dance.
Of course, that's right. Yeah.
But
and you got a little salsa, honestly, a little salsa in your blood, yeah.
Yes, I do. I'm half Cuban. Uh-huh. My dad's Cuban, and I actually have an aunt that taught me how to salsa and do merengue and everything. So.
Nice. So Bob, I don't hear you chiming in here with the old salsa and merengue thing.
I'm known to have my moments, but I don't usually have the range of hip motion required for this nonsense.
Oh, for us, there's river dance.
This is true.
But you do a little bit of dancing. I mean, came from a...
But I'm more known for my laid-back side. I remember a couple months ago, I went to this reggae concert, Ziggy Marley, and, you know, that's 4 hours of the reggae bop, you know, straight in the pit.
Yeah.
It's not something to laugh at, or maybe it is, depending on how you look at it.
Celia, you were saying, you mentioned earlier, that dancing helps you get ready for classical performances?
Right.
What do you guys do back there? You mentioned that you really did have a dance party in your dressing room?
Yes, right behind that door.
Yeah,
actually.
Like why? what, you know, does
well,
it get you up, pumped up, or...?
Gets us pumped up, gets the energy if we're nervous, gets our adrenaline out before it could do something to the performance. But it just helps us get in the zone, I think.
Very nice. I like that. It's a great way to do it. Some meditation, a little bit more sedate quality also has to enter into the thing. Julia, you have a sort of a talent for the sedate, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yes. It's remarkable. Yes. I can fall asleep on command.
Julia, let's not lose Julia. We're boring her now. Okay. So, but you can sleep on planes and cars and in rehearsal. You ever fall asleep in string quartet rehearsals?
Yes. Yes.
That's
yes,
terrible to your colleagues.
In fact, I fell asleep in the dress rehearsal today.
Did
no offense.
Really?
Sorry.
Oh,
yes,
that's good,
I did.
Though. Get your sleep, you know, mm-hmm. It's a very nice thing to do. Tommy, you and Bob have a quiet side too, a contemplative sort of, almost ceremonial sort of thing.
Yeah. Actually, we shared a room at Walnut Hill the past semester, and we developed a passion for brewing tea and talking about philosophy late at night.
Wow. So just like any old tea, Earl Grey or any
specific teas? Oh, definitely not.
No?
All sorts of fine loose leaf Chinese and whatever we find, whatever we get our hands on.
Wow, very great. Really sort of a zen hang.
Oh, absolutely.
Really nice. But Julia, let's talk about Celia's hair. So we talk about all this contemplative, yes. This sort of zen thing and getting our sleep and stuff. Mm-hmm. Celia's hair is not a quiet presence.
No, it's a beast.
It's a savage animal.
What is it? I mean, is it out of control? I mean,
it is. Well, especially when I was younger, my mom had to special order horse shampoo because it was so...
You're serious? Like horse shampoo?
Horse shampoo. So she'd have to like put my head in the big kitchen sink and then start scrubbing. And
Does anything in particular make it growl or...
There are many things. Viola jokes is probably the number one offense, I would say.
Julia, should I tell a Viola joke,
oh,
or should you?
Oh, please do. Well, you go first.
Okay.
Well, I don't want anybody to get hurt, so.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to stand back. But do you know how you can tell if the stage is level?
That's when they're drooling out of both sides, right?
That's right.
Both sides drool. Yeah.
That's a serious growl. I
every
like that
single
one.
Rehearsal, I have to go through like 10 minutes of Viola jokes.
It's just jealousy. Think of it that way, Celia. All right. The four of you will be back at the end of the show to play a piece by our teenage composer on today's show. But for now, thank you for this wonderful performance of the Schulhof, and great speaking with you.
Thank you.
See you soon. The Tarantella Quartet, ages 16 and 17, all of them studying at the Walnut Hill School in Natick, Massachusetts, with their coach, Laura Tilkey. Okay, now to the sublime music of one of my favorite composers. Please welcome all the way from Banks, Oregon, 15-year-old pianist Carenza Gimri. Carenza, thanks for making the trip from the Pacific Northwest. The composer we're talking about is Alexander Scriabin. Tell everybody about the pieces you're going to play for us.
I'm going to play two Scriabin etudes. The first one, Opus 2 number 1, is in C-sharp minor and was actually composed by Scriabin when he was my age, 15 years old. And the second one is Opus 8 number 2, and that is in F-sharp minor.
All right. The stage is yours, Carenza.
Thank you. Thank you.
Carenza Gimri, 15-year-old pianist from Banks, Oregon, playing Scriabin for us. Really nice of you to bring that beautiful music and play it so well. It's a sort of a quirky sort of character his music has, don't you think?
Yes, definitely. But
sort of dark, but you know, sort of.
But
mystical.
It pokes fun at the same time.
It does. It has its fun. I like that second one a lot too. Really runs around.
Yes.
Really, really nicely done. You've got to be one of the youngest college students we've ever had on this show. You started college at what age?
I started college taking classes at Pacific University in Oregon when I was 11 years old.
11's a good age today. and I'm sure, you know, the perennial question, you know, must be when you're, you know, what are you doing there? You know, you're sitting in a class, and what are your classmates say?
Well, the most commonly asked question is, are you the professor's daughter? And no, I'm not the professor's daughter. I don't have any relation to anyone at Pacific University. But it was definitely very weird at first for me and the other students having me in class. But it's gotten more normal and fun over the years.
Get used to it, yeah. Now, you're in college without a high school diploma. How did you swing that?
Okay, so my mom started homeschooling me at an early age. And eventually she reached this point where she wanted to teach me science. But we can't purchase any science equipment because we're homeschooled and they're afraid we're going to blow something up.
Right.
So yeah. we can't purchase that equipment. So my mom was talking to a friend of hers, knew the president of Pacific University, and a couple conversations later, and after they heard that I'd played in Carnegie Hall, and they thought that justified me, you know, going to college without a high school diploma or
a little special
SATs.
Treatment. Yeah, so absolutely.
Thought that was nice.
It's working out well. I mean, what are you studying there?
Well, I'm triple majoring, which is a lot of work, and I really don't recommend it for anyone. But I'm majoring in math, chemistry, and physics, and I'm hoping to minor in political science.
That's a lot.
Yes, that is a lot.
I don't think I've ever heard of a triple major, much less a minor, much less none of it involving music. I mean, in the meantime, playing so well. Seriously, though, the amount you get done really amazes me. Where does music fit in? I mean, where do you have time to do any music at all?
It's definitely a challenge to find time to practice, but right now I'm only 15 years old. I'm not entirely sure what I want to do with my life, but music, I really hold music very close to me, and I always want to have it there, even if I don't do it professionally as a hobby, and I just really enjoy it. So.
Well, I'll tell you, as a hobby, you're doing pretty darn well. It's just wonderful hearing you play, and
thank you.
I'm sure you'll do well at whatever you pursue. It's great having you on the show today.
Thanks,
Carenza.
Much. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Carenza Gimri, 15-year-old pianist from Banks, Oregon.
Welcome back to the Radio Showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week we're coming from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. New England Conservatory, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Coming up, an 18-year-old composer and his beautiful post-romantic string quintet played by our teenage musicians. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Joining us now is a terrific 17-year-old flutist from Greenville, South Carolina. Please welcome Daquise Montgomery. Daquise, we're going to be playing one of the great pieces from the flute repertoire. Tell everybody what it's going to be.
The piece that we will be playing is Poem by Charles T. Griffiths.
All right. Jaques Montgomery, 17-year-old flutist from Greenville, South Carolina, studying at the South Carolina Governor's School for the Arts and Humanities there. Congratulations not only on a wonderful performance, Jaques, but congratulations on your receiving one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Awards.
Thank you.
That's wonderful news. And so what did you use this financial award for?
I bought a new flute.
There you go. Sounds great, too.
Yeah.
Now, Jaques, lots of kids work hard for what they want, but you have the most unusual way of supporting your music studies.
Right now, I am filling up a pot with water to boil. Now we're going to start to brown the ground beef. After doing that, we will layer each with first starting off with the bottom of potatoes, then adding the ground beef, then a layer of cheese, then bacon bits, and then do that one more time and you'll have two layers of a husband's delight. My grandmother is the one who taught me how to make the husband's delight. And ever since then, I've loved cooking it and eating it. While I let the ground beef sit, I'm going to begin slicing the potatoes and also talk to you about how this all began. It first started out, I was in seventh grade. I had been doing strings, but it wasn't going quite well for me. So my teacher played in a faculty talent show, and she played a piece by Bercaldi, which is called Carnival of Venice. And that was the first time that I had ever heard a professional flute player, and it really just made my day. And so after the talent show, I told her that I wanted to learn how to play the flute. And she said, okay, like, yeah, really. She really didn't believe me. So, like any other young person or adolescent, I forgot all about it. But then I had a dream that Miss Richardson and myself were playing a duet in front of an orchestra. And the next day I went and told her about it, and I was like, I really have to do this, because I know this message must have come from the Lord, you know. So she said, well, once you get a flute, then we can start doing lessons. A long story. So I did actually get a good, decent working flute. And so I began taking lessons. And the private lessons were pretty costly. So I took for about a month or two. And it began to, like, get very bad, like, there are other things in our household that we needed to pay for that were more important than taking lessons. And so I understood that. And so I talked to Miss Richardson about it, and she told me that she would drop the price a little bit for me to help me out, because she understood my situation. And so that was still a pretty steep amount of money. So one day she tasted my cooking. She really didn't believe it was me. She thought it was my mother's cooking. And she told me that she was just joking, but I took it into consideration. She told me that I could cook for her to pay for my private lessons, and that came about, and I began to cook for her to pay for my private lessons. Now we've just finished cutting the potatoes, and we're about to put them in the pot to boil. Right now, I've finished boiling the potatoes, and the ground beef has finished browning, and we are layering it right now. One of the funniest things about cooking for Miss Richardson was that the name of the thing that her family really liked, or that her husband actually really liked, was A Husband Delight, and he ended up liking this, making this one of his most likable dishes out of anything he's ever tasted, I guess. Now I am layering it with mozzarella cheese and mild cheddar cheese. I think God puts people in your life for many reasons, but he knew that Mr. Richardson would be the one that would do so much for me and has done so much for me. She is like my guardian angel, or not like my guardian angel, she is my guardian angel. She's always made a way where I thought there was not going to be a way possible. She's like my second mom. I have just finished putting the cheese on top of it, and I'm going to add the final touches by adding real bacon bits. Now we're going to put it in the oven to bake, and it's going to turn out very well, hopefully.
And here it is, Chris, husband's delight. DeQuise prepared it himself just for you.
Really?
Yep.
Husband's delight. I don't see the six pack in it.
Take a taste.
Not enough different kinds of meat in here for my taste. Oh, yeah.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah. I'm on this. You can just leave that right over there. That's beautiful. I was going to say stick with the flute, but I don't know. The cooking's pretty good, DeQuise. And it's wonderful that Mrs. Richardson came up with this way, and so the you know, she's giving you great lessons, and I think she's getting the better end of the deal, I got to say. you're really good. On all fronts.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed playing with you. Really enjoyed being with you and eating your food.
Thank you.
Thank you, DeQuise. DeQuise Montgomery, 17-year-old flutist from Greenville, South Carolina.
Podcasts from the top are available every week at npr.org/podcasts. Each year, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Learn more at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Our final guest on today's program is an outstanding 18-year-old composer from Winchester, Massachusetts, Stephen Feigenbaum. Stephen, welcome. We're going to hear a string quintet you've written in a moment, but first I want to talk to you because you have some really interesting views on the cohabiting of classical music and popular music in our time.
That's right. I think that classical musicians should acknowledge pop music as a legitimate expression of music, and that I think that classical music needs to be better integrated into the mainstream of music. And in order to do that, I think both sides need to sort of agree that they're all sort of good ways of expressing music.
Yeah.
But I found from my own experience, just sort of burning CDs from my friends who don't listen to classical music at all, that a lot of them who wouldn't listen to something like Mozart, that they consider sort of old and boring, the same way they consider old popular music from, you know, 1890s or whatever, old and boring, would find that the music that classical composers were writing today is actually very interesting and intense.
Yeah.
And they can really enjoy something as complicated as, you know, Elliot Carter, or as sort of radical as Steve Reich or something like that, which sort of people don't acknowledge, that I think the classical musicians sort of are intent on targeting classical music at an older generation and promoting, you know, older classical music to them, rather than promoting, you know, newer classical music to younger people, which I think would be more effective.
You had a great seat at the Boston Symphony lately. What were you going to see?
Yeah, it was nice. We went to concert of all BSO commissions from their history, which is, you know, relatively short history, but they've contributed some really great pieces to the repertoire. Stravinsky's Symphony of Psalms, Bartok Concerto for Orchestra.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Koussevitzky years. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and many others. So they put those on a program, and I went to see it. A wonderful concert. And so my parents and I, we got seats up in the stage left balcony, which is really nice because when they build the stage out, which they sometimes do for extra players, the balcony is actually directly over the stage, and you can really get a good view of the conductor. And so, you know, we wanted to get some really good seats, so we got them early for those seats.
Nice.
And they were split up, and, you know, it was sort of arbitrary as to who took which seats, but it turns out my parents ended up sitting next to James Levine's mother,
How did they know it was his mother?
Oh, they didn't. It was just some old woman. But then they were just sort of like they were talking to her and they were sort of like, so what brings you to this concert? She's like, oh, my son's in the orchestra. Huh. And they're like, oh, what does he play? And she's like, the baton. But I mean, she's a regular at the BSO, which shouldn't be surprising at all.
Nice. But
the best part is I ended up sitting next to the composer John Harbison.
Oh, well,
and,
yeah.
And he recognized me because he'd given a master class at the Tanglewood program the previous summer, and I had showed him some of my music, and I guess he takes note of, you know, the composers who are sort of around his, you know, local area in Boston.
Did you know at that point that you were going to be having a mentorship session with Mr. Harbison?
I did not know that.
See? Now let's tell everybody what we're talking about.
All right. You've been
selected for our Young Composer Project, so you get to work with a famous adult composer, and your session is with...
John Harbison.
John Harbison. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
That is fantastic.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about this piece we're going to hear.
Well, it's called Serenade for Strings, and that title sort of harkens back to the Tchaikovsky Serenade for Strings, which was the inspiration for the piece. But I would say, as far as the style, I look more to Mahler and composers like him. Who wrote string pieces that were sort of very romantic and slow, mm-hmm. and sort of with dense counterpoint. Mm-hmm. And so when I wrote it, I was looking a lot at the scores, especially from Mahler's Fifth Symphony, Adagietto.
But the purpose behind the piece, I mean, are you hoping to be the next Mahler, or are you putting him, yourself in his shoes, or is this an exercise?
It was kind of an exercise. I think at the time, I started it more than 2 years ago, I was just sort of writing what I felt like writing, and, you know, how can you not be attracted to that kind of music?
Yeah.
But I think now I look back and I say, well, that was a really good exercise in writing like that style, and, you know, writing a piece with good counterpoint and string writing. But I wouldn't consider myself a composer in like a late romantic style. Mm-hmm. I mean, the piece is about, you know, 100 years too late if that's my goal. So
not a moment too soon, though. It's a beautiful piece, and congratulations are in order, by the way. You just got national recognition for this piece.
That's correct. The Serenade for Strings won second place, as well as several awards along the way in a national competition.
Oh, because there are regionals and locals.
There's regionals. Yeah. There's state, and so MTNA, which is a music teachers organization in the U.S., has this composition competition, and in my senior division, which is high school, I was recognized for this piece.
Well, we're very, very, very proud to have it on the show. Have a seat while I bring back the quartet to play it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hear the Tarantella String Quartet, and we're also going to welcome 17-year-old bassist Nicholas Schwartz from Brookline, Massachusetts. This will be a beautiful way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our young performers and thank you for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. Again, this is Stephen Feigenbaum's Serenade for Strings.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. The music producer is Tom Vinieri, and the tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Kim Razeman, and our technical director is Barrett Ouellette, with Francis X. Coakley, David Forbes, and Dan Hallis. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is made possible in part by the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism. Our program is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.